It's The Takeaway. I'm Alana Casanova-Burgess, in for Melissa Harris-Perry. For generations of Latino audiences, the Puerto Rican boy band Menudo was everything. Even if you weren't into their music or their flashy outfits, there was no denying that they were a cultural force. Formed in the late 1970s, the group sold millions of records and packed arenas around the world. We asked for your stories about the band.
Hi, this is Vanessa, and I'm from South Amboy, New Jersey. And I remember Menudo way back in the 1990s, maybe the 1980s. But Ricky Martin was a member. And I remember one of the songs. It's lluvia, lluvia, arco iris, vienes y te vas mojando mis cabellos. It was great to have a Latino group back in the day, a boy band like that, a role model for us kids, and it was just great.
Jesus Ramirez, city of St. Paul, Minnesota. So my aunt was really a huge Menudo fan. They were living in Mexico and I was living in California when I would go visit them. The song for Menudo, Súbete mi moto.
Their manager, Edgardo Diaz, had a strategy to keep the band going for decades. Once a member reached his later teens, he was replaced by a new, younger kid, so that the group could continue indefinitely. The new HBO Max docuseries Menudo, Forever Young, traces the rise of the group as they amassed fan bases across the world, including in the contiguous United States, where Spanish-speaking bands had previously struggled to achieve mainstream success. But in addition to showing what made Menudo so special, the documentary also explores the difficult behind-the-scenes conditions that many of its members were subjected to. That includes allegations made by several former members that Edgardo Diaz physically abused them. Diaz has denied those allegations. To delve into Menudo and this new docuseries, I spoke with
Christopher Rios, the co-director and co-executive producer of Menudo Forever Young.
And
this is Ralphie Rodriguez, former member of Menudo and current singer and bass player for the band 2080. The first album that I heard was Quiero Ser, which had the song Súbete a mi moto on it. And I became this huge fan. They also had a TV show on Channel 2 in Puerto Rico. So I became a huge fan right away of the band. I could totally identify with them, even though I was 9 and they were 13. And just loved the music. The arrangements on the records were incredible. Songs like Cuando Pasará, Por Amor, that basically give you chills with the violins and everything. The production was amazing.
And what was that audition process like for you in order to join the band?
So I auditioned twice, actually. I had started in another boy band in Puerto Rico called Los Chicos, where Chayanne started. And I was 11 or 12 years old when I started there. After that, I was doing some shows as a soloist by myself around the island, small little shows, but obviously always with the dream of becoming one of the Menudos. I auditioned, I think, when I was barely 13 in January of 1986. They chose Sergio that time, and then I auditioned again a couple months later, and then they actually chose me in September of 1986 as a 17th member.
Christopher, going to you now, the documentary is dedicated to the fans of Menudo. Did you have menuditis when you were growing up?
I got to be honest, no. You know, I think anyone who grew up in the 70s, 80s, 90s in the Puerto Rican community, whether you were on the island or in the diaspora, it was a part of your life. I wasn't the demographic that they were targeting, but certainly I had cousins who were fans. I had aunts that were fans. You know, I grew up on the island, so I remember going to birthday parties. And sometimes, depending on the party, some of the party favorites would be Menudo themed or related. But I'm more of a hip hop head. But I definitely am a fan now, I'll tell you that much. Like going through this journey of, you know, researching and reporting this project, I really have a newfound appreciation for the contributions that Menudo has made to our culture, to music. I collect vinyl. I was a DJ. And once we started really digging into this project, and thanks to Ralphie, actually, who in our conversations really kind of brought us into the behind the scenes world of like how the music was made. I have to say that I think that Menudo is, along with salsa, along with other Puerto Rican styles of music, like the music that Menudo did, I would argue is on par with those other musics because of the cultural contributions that they made.
What about as a journalist? What interested you about the story of this band?
there was a lot more layers to this story than what you saw from the album covers, from the marketing material. And it's not just the stuff that we get into in the later episodes. It's just sort of the links between the space and place in which the music is made, right? Menudo comes out in a time in Puerto Rico's history, the late 70s, early 80s, when there's a need for it. There's a growing middle class with children that are looking for something to sort of connect to. Not just happening in Puerto Rico, it's happening all over Latin America. And those sort of parts of the story felt like opportunities to say more than just the story of the band, but also the story of Puerto Rico, the story of Latin America at a specific time and specific, you know, space.
I'm so glad you brought that up. And Ralphie, this question is for you. There's a moment in the second episode where we hear Beatriz Acevedo, founder of the website MeToo, talk about what it meant for people in this country to be watching people who looked like them.
There were no groups really that felt like you. If you think about the 80s and looking at the, you know, who was topping the music charts, there are no Latinos. So along comes Menudo. And you're like, oh my God, these kids are like me. They're bilingual, they're bicultural. They talk about eating the same food that I like to eat. Their parents seem to be like my parents. There was just such an emotional connection.
Could you feel that in the moment, that you were part of a kind of Latinidad that was taking shape, and it was taking shape around Puerto Ricanness?
You know, I think that you felt it, even though at 13, 14 years old, I don't think that we really understood the depth of what we were actually doing, to be quite frank. But I will say that that is something that is very, very important, that once I saw the docuseries for myself, which, by the way, I've watched 5 times, but she did make an amazing point about how the impact of Menudo transcended the music, transcended the age, the fact that it was something that helped with what we were going through, not only as Puerto Ricans, but also as Hispanics in the United States. And that's why I really, really love this project and this production, this documentary, because I really do believe with all of my heart that it's a very serious historic piece. I think it's going to do an amazing good to every single person that watches it. It's much more than just about a boy band. It's actually talks about, it goes into the history of Puerto Rico. It goes through political things. It gives an amazing backdrop to what we were facing as a people at that time, and how Menudo, through its music and through its message and through its image, was able to somehow break through into the American market.
Okay, I hate to pause right here, but we have to take a quick break. More Menudo in a moment. This is The Takeaway. Back with you now on The Takeaway. I'm Alana Casanova-Burgess, in for Melissa. We've been talking about the new HBO Max docuseries, Menudo, Forever Young, with the documentary's co-director and co-executive producer, Christopher Rios, as well as former Menudo member, Ralphie Rodriguez. The series provides a comprehensive look at what made the Puerto Rican boy band so appealing to multiple generations of fans. And it also delves into the darker side of the band's history, including allegations of physical abuse that multiple former members, including Rodriguez, have made against the group's manager, Edgardo Diaz. Diaz has denied those allegations. I asked Rodriguez what it was like for him to revisit some of those painful memories during his interviews for the docuseries.
We're talking about things that happened over 30 years ago. And then all of a sudden, things come back to my memory during the interview. And it was so interesting how things that I hadn't thought about in 30 years all of a sudden start to pop up, you know? So it was difficult, but the production team, they made me feel really, really comfortable. So it was challenging personally, just because things were sort of being resurfaced that had not been touched in a long time. And even right now, I could say, after watching the docuseries 5 times, because I love it so much, I mean, there's just, the editing is impeccable. I don't know what they did, but there is something going on with that where I know what's going to happen. I just don't know when it's going to happen. So it's fresh every single time. It's just amazing. But I can say now, after watching it 5 times, all of a sudden there are other memories that are coming back to mind that all of a sudden I'm questioning myself, you know, things that I thought that were already healed. And all of a sudden I'm starting to think, are these things that I actually buried and didn't really deal with? So either way, even if that's the case, I think it's positive, because the docuseries has given me the opportunity to sort of touch areas that really do need to be touched within my heart and with inner healing, you know?
Christopher, what was your approach to documenting that more painful side of Menudo's history?
You know, Ralphie originally was very supportive on background, but he didn't want to be a part of the documentary, mainly because of the difficult things that we were asking a lot of these, you know, former band members to kind of revisit. Our approach from the start was to invite whoever was a part of the band to tell us their story from their perspective, because I think that what we saw as a production team, you know, what Angel Manuel saw, what I saw, was that in the past, this story had only been told through one perspective, through one lens. And that lens was from, you know, the lens of the Menudo management, mainly Edgardo Diaz's narrative. But there were other people who were invested in maintaining that legend and that lore of Menudo. We really wanted to try to give everyone else an opportunity to come and tell their side of the story from the way that they experienced it. It's completely understandable, but at first some of the band members were skeptical. But once they saw we really meant what we said, that we weren't trying to do the same old thing, we weren't trying to do what had been done in the past, we're really trying to open up this space and this platform for them to share their perspective, I think we gained their trust, and the trust was everything.
Speaking of management, has Edgardo Diaz said anything about the documentary and the allegations that are detailed in it?
To my knowledge, no. He has representatives that we had engaged with throughout the process. We haven't heard anything from them. We haven't heard anything from him directly. So we don't really know what he thinks of it.
So what are you both hearing from fans who are loving this series, loving the nostalgia trip, but also coming to terms themselves with what it means to have loved a group that had this really dark, painful side to it?
For me, the social media response has been incredible. The Menudo family, as I always call them, the Menudo fans, but they're actually family because they're so faithful and they have always been there and they always will be there. But the family response has been incredible. There's this mixture of gratitude. It's like additional gratitude that they say, thank you so much for bringing me joy despite everything that you went through. Thank you so much for sharing your story. Thank you so much for letting us know what was really going on. And, you know, just a sense of gratitude. Obviously, they do feel a little sadness. They do feel sadness. Some of them are really crushed at knowing that, you know, at some of the sacrifices that we had to make to bring them that joy. But at the end of the day, I feel the same about them in the sense that if it weren't for them being there and the love and the support that they always showed and the hugs and the kisses and the, you know, the letters and, you know, and the stuffed animals that they would send us to our homes. If it weren't for them, you know, the experience wouldn't really be worth it, you know, because if it was just singing and you didn't feel that love, it really wouldn't have been worth it. They really made it worth our while.
I do want to share, you know, we do have one of La Chica Jovens in our docuseries, Xaviera Rodriguez, who is the Chica Joven de Menudo from New York City. You know, she was one of the fans that appears sort of substantially in the docuseries. And very much like the band members, she was super skeptical of us when we approached her and said, hey, we would love to hear your story about the time that you were La Chica Joven de Menudo. And she was cautious because she thought it was a joke. But also, what I think that people forget is, yeah, the guys went through a lot, but also the fans went through a lot. Not all the fans knew what was happening behind the scenes in the band, but some fans were paying attention and some fans were really moved by what happened when, you know, a lot of this stuff from behind the scenes starts to kind of come out. And when you think about someone like Xaviera, when you think about a lot of the fans who were in the diaspora at the time, they may have lived in East Harlem, they may have lived in the South Bronx, but for the most part, in the early 80s, a Puerto Rican, a dark-skinned Puerto Rican, right, in East Harlem, in the South Bronx, they were not getting positive images of their community from the media, from the U.S., right? And Menudo gave those fans an opportunity to imagine a different self, right? A different future for who they were and who they could be. And I think for me, that is one of the most important things about Menudo's legacy. For the diaspora, it was especially powerful because it's one of the first times that young Puerto Ricans, young, you know, we say Latinx, but really at the time there wasn't that identity. So young diasporic Latinos, Latinas, you know, people from Latin America had a positive image in the media to look up to and aspire to and to celebrate. For Xaviera, that was especially true. And I think it comes out in the docuseries, but she sent a note of thank you because she said, you know, I thought this was just my little private thing, that this was just, you know, me and my friends who were fanning out over Menudo. And now I realize it was a much bigger phenomena, and having the opportunity to share that story and revisit it was big for her. And for us as filmmakers, that's all you hope, right? Like you just hope that you have some impact, even if it's small. It doesn't seem like we're having a small impact here, but that, you know, the people that you made this film for, and I always say that we made this film first and foremost for Puerto Ricans, right? The people that you made this film for, that it resonates with them. And so I'm really grateful for that.
Ralphie Rodriguez is a former member of Menudo, now lead singer for the band 2080. And Christopher Rios is the co-director and co-executive producer of Menudo Forever Young. You can catch it on HBO. Thank you both so much.
Thank you so much, Joanna.
Appreciate it.
All right, it's been great being back in the host chair, filling in for Melissa Harris-Perry. She is back on Monday after a well-deserved vacation. The team is working on some great shows coming up. Make sure you all tune in. And if you missed anything or want to listen back, check out our podcast feed. All the segments are there. Quick shout out to the crew that puts it all together each week. They're truly the best. Thank you so much. Jackie Martin is our line producer. Vince Fairchild is the broadcast engineer. Mayan Levinson helped us out on the board this week. Jay Cowett is our director and editor. Our producers are Katarina Barton, Ryan Wild, Mary Steffenhagen, and Deborah Goldstein. Our senior producers are Shanta Covington and Ethan Oberman. Digital producer is Zach Bynum. David Gable is our executive assistant. Our intern is Callie Teitelbaum. And Wombo Wu is our executive producer. Make sure to clink a glass or two for them this weekend, please. Thank you so much for spending part of your day with us. I'm Alana Casanova-Burgess, in for MHP, and this is The Takeaway.